Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
It is 9:25 on this Monday morning, August 3rd, and we're getting ready to talk about schools and COVID and what do they need. Nora Gordon joins us. She's an economist and associate professor at Georgetown University's McCourt School of Public Policy and the co-author of Common Sense Evidence, The Education Leader's Guide to Using Data and Research. Good morning, Professor. How are you?
Good morning, Tommy. It's great to be here.
Thanks for taking the time with us because this is very important. The clock is ticking. A lot of parents depend on schools, and it's very important, obviously, in the development of children. What kind of help do schools and teachers and students need from Congress? What should it look like? And in terms of obligations or strings or rules, et cetera, how important is it to cut through the red tape?
There's a lot to get in here with. I think that
you got a half
basic
an hour,
things
professor.
To keep in mind are that we've got to suppress the virus. That is number one. Without that, nothing else can really work. So we need Congress to help us with that. And then we need cash to help state and local governments, including school districts, with these huge revenue holes that they are facing. Because if they don't have the money, they can't do whatever is going to make sense, whether that is distance learning or some form of where it's safe in-person instruction.
So, you know, I hear the governors say they're going to leave it up to the different school districts. At least that's the way it is here in Louisiana. In some cases, they're leaving it up in terms of private schools to the individual schools themselves. And that's primarily in relation to Catholic education, and the Catholic schools are big here. Where do you start in terms of this? Do you start with a plan and then work your way down to the schools, or do you start with the schools and look at, and not just the district, but the individual school, the area, and see what you need and go up from there? Because before you get what you need, you got to figure out what you need, right?
Absolutely. This is such a tough issue, and I've got to say I am so glad right now that I am not a superintendent because they are in a tough spot and nobody's going to be happy. But what they really could use is some good guidance about what are the conditions that mean it's safe to reopen in person, and then what you need to do to make that safe. And this was the kind of thing we saw some stuff coming out. Scott Gottlieb put out some stuff about that was the phased reopening for the states. People might remember this, where it was about, you know, what's phase one, what's phase two, how many days do cases need to be declined, kind of thing. Because honestly, we're not public health experts. You know, people have expertise in education. They don't figure out how to make their schools up to code for earthquakes or something. And this isn't really their area of expertise either. What I think is dangerous is if Congress is putting incentives saying you can only get this money if you're open in person. And that's basically saying, you know what, even if this is a really dangerous thing to do, not just students and your teachers, but for the entire community, when we think about community transmission, but then thinking that places feel very desperate. They need to staff, even virtual instruction. They need money. They rely on state and local revenue, which is drying up because that depends like income tax, sales tax. So it's really a double whammy here. We have both the public health problem and the recession problem.
So not all school districts are the same, right? Some are more affluent than others. So in terms of the amount of aid, again, I guess it's not a one-size-fits-all thing, right? And there has to be a lot of flexibility involved?
Sure. I think we need one size cannot fit all, both in the sense that poorer places are going to need more help, and also that we really don't want Congress telling local school districts what they can and can't spend the money on, because different places are going to have really different needs. Two huge issues that are coming up here and very expensive are transportation and technology. And if you think about, you know, how many kids could you have on a school bus safely in a place where local conditions are safe enough that you could have school in person, it becomes really prohibitively expensive to think about doing this. Then you also have all different kinds of tech needs. This is something actually Congress and held by supporting more funding for the E-Rate program, which is a program to get internet into schools and libraries. But even though that's been around for quite some time, there's still many places where that connectivity is not there. And so they need more funding for that. And they also need, you know, the flexibility to allow that to support technology and connectivity inside students' homes, because that may be where the learning is happening now.
And you also need a device, right? So I don't know, what do the numbers show in terms of who has a computer, who doesn't, who's able to receive online training, who isn't?
Yeah, I mean, there are huge digital divide. That's what educators call it. I mean, a lot of stuff, when you think about the hardware, it's actually one of the cheaper components here relative to thinking about if you don't have the connectivity, you can't use it. And if you're thinking about broadband expansion to a rural area, that's a huge investment that you really need something like the federal level to step in on. But I think a lot of the costs that have gotten a lot of attention are costs that are specific to distance learning or to in-person learning during the pandemic. So people are focusing a lot on PPE, hand sanitizer, plexiglass. Are you going to have the tent to do things outside? Do you need Chromebooks? Do you need hotspots? But the fact is, schools still need money for the same kinds of things that they always need also, which is mostly staffing. And if you think about if you're doing in-person instruction, but you can't have the room as full, that means you need more classes. You need more teachers rather than fewer. If you're doing distance learning and you're trying to make that at all engaging with any kind of real-time instruction, it's a lot easier to do that with a smaller group. Or if you want to have any kind of one-on-one check-ins or smaller group tutoring, all of that stuff, you know, even if people are online, you're still paying those staff.
We're going to take a break, pick it up here when we come back. After Katrina, Professor, we went through it here, and we had a platoon system where two different schools would use the same classrooms. Of course, the difference is, with the two different schools, there were two different faculties. In this instance, as you're well aware, you're trying to make the same teachers and the same classrooms, I guess, go twice as far, and that doesn't add up. That's not the same thing at all. So we'll pick it up here when we come back. If you have any questions or comments, you can text them to the Mortgage Financial phone and text line at 504-260-1870, and I'll pass them along. We will be back in a flash on WWL. Right now, it is a look at traffic. So what kind of aid do schools need from Congress, and what should be included in the next stimulus bill to help students and teachers? We're talking to Nora Gordon, economist and associate professor at Georgetown University's McCourt School of Public Policy. She's the co-author of Common Sense Evidence, The Education Leader's Guide to Using Data and research. So the Democrats came out with their plan in mid-May. The Republicans introduced theirs last Tuesday, I think. As it stands now, as far as I know, you got Speaker Pelosi and Senator Schumer talking to Secretary of the Treasury Mark Mnuchin and the President's Chief of Staff Mark Meadows. They're doing the negotiating. Professor, in terms of, and this is a big, long question, I'm sorry, but they got $1 trillion that's left that has not been allocated. What has been given, what has been allocated to the schools so far? And I ask that because Mitch McConnell's saying that 15 to 20 senators won't vote for any kind of coronavirus deal or stimulus, and those are Republicans. What did they get, and what more do they need, and what would it look like if the aid was flexible where the teachers or the school districts or principals could decide what's best?
So what they got so far is really very little. The CARES Act, which came out earlier in the spring, sent $16 billion for education, which included higher education. And that might sound like a lot of money, but when you think of Title I is the largest federal program for schools in regular times, and that's about $16 billion a year that gets sent out based on poverty. The federal money for special education is about $13 billion a year, just every year. That's the status quo. And so what they have gotten is really not much. The Council of Chief State School Officers, a number of different groups have estimates about what they need. They're saying that schools are going to need to be able to operate remotely, and, you know, where they're able to open in person, it's going to be much more expensive, not just the PPE, but also the staffing to accommodate the, you know, safer group sizes. So they're saying, you know, anywhere from $150 to $250 billion extra expenses. And then there's the question of this revenue hole. So even if it wasn't going to cost more, school districts are getting less money from their states. If they are getting money locally, which New Orleans gets a lot of its revenue locally, but then you're thinking, oh, things like sales tax, tourism taxes, all of that revenue is going to be down. So really, they've gotten a drop in the bucket. And, you know, I read Speaker Pelosi saying, we'll be close to a plan when there's a plan. So I certainly can't read any crystal ball on that. But I guess I would just urge people to keep in mind that money that Congress sends out, even if it's not to schools, is still helpful to schools, because if they are sending more money to states and to local governments and to households, then that's freeing up money that states can send to schools. It's sort of helping reduce their budget shortfall. So if Congress does things like, say, we're going to continue to have the federal government pay a greater share of Medicaid expenses, so feds pay more, states pay less, then the states have that money that they used to be spending on Medicaid, which is going up anyway, that they could spend on other things, including school. It's also going to be really important. You know, one of the big sticking points in this negotiation is around the unemployment benefits. And, you know, you have to remember, this is really about the well-being of kids. This is not about kids just as students, as little test score producing robots or something. They're whole people. They need housing. They need food. They need stability. They need their parents to have okay mental health. You know, things like unemployment is going to be really important there. Maintaining food security for kids through food stamps, what's now known as SNAP, and making sure that those payments can continue to go out to families, even if they're unable to get to an office in person to document their income and their need. So there's ways for Congress to help, even that aren't just about schools.
So let me take a snapshot, and you tell me if this picture is accurate, or maybe I should paint a portrait. Schools traditionally underfunded. I don't know that any school system has ever been overfunded. We hear about teachers being underpaid. We hear about teachers having to go into their own pockets to buy the basic supplies for the classrooms. There is political pressure for schools to open, but yet it's obviously going to cost a lot more money, but there's no offer of additional money substantially. And we still got to remember that when all of this started, the schools were underfunded, the teachers were underpaid, and they were going into their own pockets to buy supplies. Is that right?
In many places, yes. And especially the places with the most disadvantaged students who really need help from the schools the most. And so what I'm concerned about is that saying you can have this money only if you're open in person, it's going to be enough to make some places open, but it's not enough to allow them to do it safely. And in many places, there's no way to do it safely if the community transmission is too high.
So the first goal would be, I guess, to educate the kids, and you can't educate the kids unless you can do that safely from both the student and the teacher perspective. Yes?
Yeah, and in some cases, that is going to mean remote learning. And I'm a parent, and I will tell you, remote learning is a challenge. And you know, this is especially challenging for the youngest kids. This is especially challenging for students with disabilities. And so where schools are able to reopen, they are going to be facing hard choices about which kids get to attend school, how many days. You know, it's not going to be, they're not going to be able to open for everybody safely with the money that they have. So I hope that districts will be doing that and saying, okay, we're going to get the youngest kids in here and we're going to be supporting our students with disabilities who may have a much harder time engaging with distance learning.
If I were to use all of my executive power and make Professor Nora Gordon the czar of this, would you do? What? Huh?
Please do that.
Yes, if I were to do that, if I could do that, what plan would you envision? What would you have happen? How much would it take? How would you distribute it? Would there be any conditions for the schools, et cetera, et cetera? Fix it for me is what I'm
asking. We're thinking about this at a federal level. Honestly, most of the things would not be really about micromanaging schools. It would be about the public health response. So things like Senator Cassidy has this Suppress COVID Act to reward regional collaboration, provide funding for testing and tracing. Without that, you're in this game of whack-a-mole. You're not going to be able to serve all of your students all day. The economy's not going to recover, so states and districts aren't going to be able to generate the revenue themselves. So something, you know, like that, ramping up that public health support, supporting these collaborations, supporting the political independence of CDC. And then I would like to just send a bunch of cash and keep it flexible to address this revenue hole problem. And it could be for schools, and it also should be for things like, you know, flexible things. This is what the government does in times of recession. During the Great Recession, the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, you know, the stimulus. So there should be stimulus that's not about public health. I would focus on E-rate, send more money, make sure it can be used outside of school buildings. And I would be, you know, urging states, I guess what Congress can do is kind of suggest things that can offer guidance to the states, but Congress can't tell the states how to run their schools. I hope that states will be asking districts to submit their plans for remote learning, offering assistance to districts in getting that kind of stuff up, although right now they honestly don't have the money to be doing that.
School's supposed to start when, if not already?
In many places already. Here, I live in Maryland. My kids are going back online August 31st. But there's many parts of the country where schools are, you know, opening right now.
And I ask that because yesterday on Face the Nation, Mark Meadows, who is the president's chief of staff, said that we still have a long way to go. I'm not optimistic that there will be a solution in the very near term, which means we pretty much schools got what they got, and good luck. God bless the students and the teachers.
Yes. Schools already, you know, they have their budgets. They're doing their thing.
Do you have any?
Really, I mean, I'll say Congress should hurry up, but Congress is already too late.
Now, I was going to ask you, do you think there's any shot at all of what you just said? And I'm not saying you're dreaming or anything. You're being very realistic. Do you think that realistically there's any shot at Congress doing any of that?
I just read about Senator Cassidy's proposal right before I started talking to you, so I don't know what's going on with that. And I do think that type of national public health approach is number one. What's happened so far does not leave me feeling optimistic. And it makes me really worried about what's going to be going on for the most vulnerable kids who don't have anyone checking in on them. And their parents are so stressed. The food insecurity, what these different evictions moratoria are going to be expiring. I don't know what we're going to see with homelessness for kids. I think that their problems are going to be bigger than just school.
I appreciate your time. Good luck with your kids and the at-home learning.
Thanks very much. Take care.
You too. Nice talking to you. Nora Gordon, economist, associate professor at Georgetown University's McCourt School of Public Policy, talking about what kind of aid schools need from Congress. When we come back, 9:52 now, we'll talk to Newell Norman, see what he's got planned for you for this Monday, August 3rd, here on WWL.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.